going to call our meeting unofficially to order. We do not have a quorum yet. And let me just talk about our future. Next week, we probably will have to meet in the evenings on both Tuesday and Thursday, so work that into your schedule, because as you know, our deadline comes rather quickly. And then the week after as well, with a possible Friday meeting, which would be March 16th. That's the deadline for us. It depends on members what transpires, of course, in committee in the next few meetings, because we are going to bring some rather large bills that are being introduced, I believe, today. So you'll see those on the calendar, and they might involve a little bit more discussion than usual. So that, with that said, Representative Meyer, would you take your place at the table? And the legislative assistant is noting the roll as members come. So, Representative Myra, will you begin walking us through some of the changes? Members, what has happened here is that House File 2127 was sent to the floor from K-12 Finance. And after some discussion with Representative Greiling, that discussion occurred between Representative Greiling and Representative Myra, because that bill rather, I would say, flew out of K-12 Finance. There wasn't a lot of time, no time for Democrats to ask questions, and we didn't think that that was the way to send this bill to the floor for a vote. We want you to give more input. We want an online learning, which now we're calling digital learning bill. That's really going to be the bill for the future, because we know our students are there, so we have to get with the program. So we're hoping today that in these discussions and future discussions that Representative Myra will have with Representative Pawlowski, Representative Mariani, and others, that we'll have a really good bill when we finally vote on the floor. So, Representative Myra, why don't you go over the entire bill and then work in the changes? Because I can't officially move it yet, not having a quorum, but you could give us an overview, Madam Chair. Representative Myra.
I would like, Madam Chair, I would like to point out Amendment 6 and walk you through the bill and those changes. The first change is on page of the second engrossment is on 2.1 through 2.5. I tried to clarify this language to help members understand that I'm not, the requirement here is not that there would be an additional course, but that the courses that are already required of students would have at least one that would be facilitated by technology. And so the wording is high school students must successfully complete at least one course under credit under paragraph A that includes digital learning as defined in section 124D.095 to graduate. So it could be any course that a student selects or a school sets up for their students. There are courses already that are provided by the that are approved by the Department of Education for digital providers.
Excuse me, Representative Myra, I can now call the meeting officially to order. I'll call the meeting for today, March 1st, to order, and the legislative assistant will note the roll. And Representative, Representative Kiefer, would you move the minutes from February 28th? Representative Kiefer moves the minutes of February 28th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approval signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the minutes for February 28th are adopted. Let's be sure our cell phones are off, members, because they will provide feedback. Representative Myra, I will move House File 2127, and after we amend it, I will recommend that it pass and be placed on the general register. But will you continue your explanation? Representative Myra has before us, members, and we might as well move it so that you can officially discuss it, the H2127A6 amendment. Members, all of those, I think she's walking us through it now, so I think we can go ahead and approve it, and then it's basically some technical changes with some deletions. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The A6 amendment is adopted. Proceed to explain the changes, Representative Myra.
All right, looking at, Madam Chair and members, looking at Amendment 6, we've already walked through line 1.2 and 1.3. Lines 1.4 down through 1.9 are a technical change, just adding the word learning behind digital to have it consistent throughout the wording. 1.10 refers to page 6, line 32. There was some discussion that 60 days was insufficient for review, and I think it was unclear that these were business days, and so I'm changing it to 90 calendar days. That's 3 months, basically, and I think that would be better understood. Then I have a delete from line 6.33 through 7.2, and that is language that I added, drawing it back to what was there previously. Previously, statute has the department must review and approve online learning providers, and I've added some information, you know, the requirement that that be done in 90 calendar days, and that they would have submit a completed application. The following few are another technical corrections of adding the word learning. And then down to 7.15 through 7.22. This is language that I added. There was some concern that this was adding more work to the department. And we have taken this out, pulling it back to current language. And Madam Chair, members, I just wanted to give reasoning why I was asked that it would be re-referred here rather than to Education Finance. The different provisions requiring the fiscal note in the Senate were removed and by an author's amendment in Education Finance. So since these are more policy issues, that's why I asked that it come back here.
Thank you, Representative Myra. And members, you need to note that the House Research Bill Summary is not the updated bill summary, and I believe Ms. Larson is preparing a revised edition for us. Ms. Larson? Thank you. So then I officially want to move House File 2127 as amended be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Are there those in the audience who would like to testify either with concerns or in support? Welcome. Say your name for the record, Mr. Walseth, and please begin.
Madam Chair and members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I want to thank Representative Myra for her good work on the bill. Technology is a very important issue. Obviously, it is the future. It's actually not even the future. It's the present. On behalf of rural schools, we're doing our best to get wired up and get ready for things like this, but I've been in conversation with some of my superintendents who are not quite there. In fact, we have some areas of the state where broadband access is still not available, and you've heard about the governor's task force on broadband expansion. There's work left to be done. This summer, when I visited some schools up in the north central part of the state around Monaga, the superintendents up there talked about the fact that they, once their students leave the building, even if the families could afford it, they just do not have access at home to the broadband access. They're going to have to come back into town, either to the library, hopefully the library is still open, to maybe take advantage of some of these things. And I think our concern primarily is with the requirement that students successfully complete one digital course I think that's going to put a mandate on schools to redesign some of their classrooms, which I think is the intent. But I talked to one superintendent last week who said, you know, we've spent $125,000 getting all of our buildings wired up with Wi-Fi. And he said, you know, that came at quite an expense. I know it's in metro districts, that sounds like a smaller amount of money, but in a small rural district, that's significant dollars to get a couple of buildings wired up. And we're trying to get there, and I know, Representative Myra, we've talked, this bill doesn't, the requirement doesn't go in, I think, until 2016.
Right, first graduates.
For the first graduates. Yes. So they have some time, and districts are getting there. But this will put, will kind of move this issue into the first line for the next round of district expenditures. And it does come with some cost. Madam Chair and members, I'm a little confused, too, about the definition of digital learning. It seems like there are two definitions, or there's a definition within the definition. And you've got, so I'm looking at page 4, lines 12 through 20. You've got the definition of digital learning, which I think is kind of a little more of a traditional definition that we understand, but then you've got blended learning within there. And so I'm just kind of curious about, are there supposed to be two definitions or how this is going to work together? So there's just a little confusion about how that would work, because we've had some conversations about this isn't necessarily just taking an online class, that's just having the school district actually build into the classroom some form of technology. And so we're just kind of wondering how that definition works together between digital and blended being in the same definition. So, you know, I hate to be the stick in the mud here and talk about, you know, rural Minnesota being the we're always kind of behind the curve here a little bit, trying to catch up with you know, what everybody else can do in terms of technology. But, you know, we're getting there. We want to be doing these things, but I think the mandate at this time is, you know, I've heard a lot of problematic feedback from my membership, and they wanted me to express that today. Thank you, and thank you, Representative Myra, for the work.
Thank you, Mr. Walsup. Representative Myra, did you want to comment on the reason you have blended learning and digital learning defined differently on page 4?
Madam Chair and members, digital learning, we wanted a definition that is just very, very broad. Technology is moving very quickly, and the key element of that is that a student would have some control over time, place, path, or pace. Blended learning is a form of digital learning. It has wonderful opportunities for the classroom where technology is used to facilitate learning. And so it is a subset, if you will, of digital learning.
Thank you very much, Representative Myra. Are there others in the audience who would like to speak in favor of or with concerns for House File 2127 as amended? I believe the department is ready. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. Kevin McHenry, the Department of Education. Just wanted to come up and briefly testify. I appreciate Representative Myra bringing this bill forward and making some of the changes. In particular, we do, the amendment does provide for the time frame change from 60 to 90 days, and we do appreciate that. One of the concerns I think that we had brought up before that I don't think is completely addressed is dealing with the definition under the definitions of digital and blended learning. Obviously, I think Representative Myra has done some work to clarify what this issue could mean, and we appreciate that. But we think it extends the opportunity for uncertified personnel to deliver digital instruction through both full-time and supplemental digital providers. I think this is something we just wanted to put out there. Under this proposal, the curriculum could be developed by an outstate vendor, assembled by a Minnesota-certified teacher, then delivered by a paraprofessional or outstate teacher. So a definition of a supervised delivery is not... Is changed here, but does that address that the certified teacher's role could be minimized and could it be difficult to monitor? And that was one of the questions we're just raising, not saying that it does or it doesn't, but that was a concern that we had, and we just saw this new language this morning.
Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, thank you for your comments. One of the things, if I can refresh everybody's memory, when we came before the committee before, there was language in there that talked about staffing flexibility. And Representative Mariani made an oral amendment, which I considered friendly, and we took that out. And he had sent me a note saying he would work with me on that issue, along with the stakeholder that was bringing that forward. We have had many conversations and many emails, and we have decided not to pursue that.
Thank you, Representative Myra. Are there others who would like to speak in favor of or have concerns? Let's watch our cell phones, please, members. Someone's providing some feedback here. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
No background music now. Thank you.
Madam Chairman and members, I appreciate the opportunity to come up and share. My name is Grace Kelleher. I work for the Minnesota School Boards Association and talked to Representative Myra just briefly as she was coming down. And being an out-state person, I wanted to share with you just a little perspective. My daughter, who has a PS2, which she just loves, you get to download games onto your computer. Well, at my house in Eagan, she can do that in about 10 minutes. In my husband's house in Albert Lea, it takes her about 3.5 to 4 hours, and they have the fastest internet available down there. So I want to suggest that we have different kinds of internet being delivered around the state of Minnesota that you need to take into understanding, and very different places around the state. Representative McFarland and I this summer visited the Itasca County Schools. There they had a digital learning environment where they had a Spanish teacher in one community, and she was teaching not only the class there, but the one that we were in, and it was amazing. I thought, no teacher I know can handle a classroom where there's no other adult there. She's 15 minutes away. But you could hear the kids whisper even in that building. So it was impressive what it could do. The superintendent did share that they spent $1 million in their school districts just getting them ready with wiring and up-to-date capacity. So I want to suggest to you that we have a program in place which we are providing technology now, but if we start to layer too much on top of it, it could bring the whole system down depending on how vertically high we can stack internet. And so just know that districts would be facing that question, adding another requirement at this point on top of what they're already doing, Madam Chair.
But Ms. Kelleher, the Minnesota School Boards Association is not opposed to digital learning or blended learning and wants to get ready for today and tomorrow, correct?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Myra, any comment to her concerns?
The effort or the desire in this bill is that we prepare our students for this next century, and we want our children to be prepared for college and career wherever they settle. You know, if they are in outstate Minnesota and they decide to go to a school in Minneapolis or university or out of state, we want them to be prepared. And it may require some effort, more effort in rural areas than in the city, but equally I want them prepared as all students across the state.
Ms. Ballmer, I believe you wanted to testify, is that correct? Please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I'm here simply wanted to make sure that I was available as a resource to the one section that remains in the bill currently that does relate to teacher preparation, which, of course, is the purview of the Board of Teaching. That's Section 2 relating to technology strategies, where it would require our licensure programs to embed within their preparation programs knowledge and skills necessary to deliver digital and blended learning. We think that this is just fine. It will take some work on the part of our preparation programs. You've been talking about this morning, there's variation amongst programs and institutions, but I think that this is fine, and particularly appreciate the effective date being pushed out to give us time to do some of that work, but won't require rulemaking or anything. So I just wanted to be available for any questions about that portion of the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Ballmer. Education Minnesota. Please say your name to the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. And, you know, online learning, digital learning, whatever we call it, I think is very important, and we certainly support that concept. But we do want to make sure that things are done well. And, you know, I have to comment on Mr. Walseth's testimony. I think he's right on in terms of, you know, if you're going to have a requirement and someone has to have a online, students have to have an online course, then don't we need to have all the materials and the resources for the individual, for the school district? It's kind of like requiring kids to learn how to ride a bike when they don't have a bike. I mean, how are you going to have students actually take an online course if they don't have a computer at home, if they don't have computer access, and the district doesn't even have all of the technology that they need? So we would recommend that before we jump into this sort of requirement, that we have the resources to do it. In terms of the higher ed requirement for colleges and universities, we think that that's a very good requirement, and I think that the higher ed is already headed in that direction. So I also think there's some question about the definition and what that means as well. It's not that this bill is a problem in itself. It's the timing of it and the resources that we need to provide for our districts. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Allswiger. Now I think we can go to questions because I don't see anyone else coming forward. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, Representative Myra, is this an absolute mandate that every school has to provide it by 2016?
Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, Representative Keel, it is a requirement that there be one course that would be facilitated by technology.
Okay.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam.
It isn't an additional course. It is that one of the courses that's already required would have a technology component.
Okay.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to point out some things. I understand Mr. Walsh's concern about rural schools, but I had the privilege of traveling through a few of my schools this winter and was absolutely impressed with the technology that is in a tiny rural school. They had laptops, iPads, children checked them out, took them home, so they had access to that. They have access to, and this is in a rural area. In fact, I got to tell you, when I door knocked, my cell phone didn't always work. So my question was, could they use them? Yes, they were using them. It was absolutely impressive. The superintendent's comment was that his teachers weren't as up to speed as his students, and they were doing things that they couldn't have in their rural areas that they could access classes to. And in fact, my larger schools are having more troubles with that. They're working on it. And to that point, we have rural schools that are teaching agriculture. They have one teacher. The teacher comes around to four schools every week. She has one day that she does at her office, but she teaches that same class in each school, and teaches an agricultural class, runs an FFA program off of that, which offers all of these rural schools the possibility. The same class is taught, the students are all online. The school doesn't necessarily have to have a teacher in that classroom. They could have a paraprofessional, someone that is supervising to make sure the students are on task, because sometimes, you know, they might be doing something else. But at any rate, there is some real access. Now, there are concerns about broadband and where it's at. So my question would be, why couldn't, if a school was still not up to snuff with access to broadband, could they not apply for a waiver or an exemption that they wouldn't be quite ready for it, as opposed to holding everyone else back? I guess I just think we're there, and our students are definitely there. We might need to provide some teacher training for teachers that are a little more senior, shall we say, that haven't had as much access. But I just think it's a mistake to hold this back, and especially for rural. We're getting it, and I've talked to my cooperative companies that are busy trying to get broadband. I'm excited. I'm getting a fiber optic next year. So, in fact, I have to wait a year. I was disappointed. So thank you very much.
Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, Representative, you bring up a wonderful point. What's great about digital learning is that it does provide access, where students can take a course that they wouldn't otherwise be able to, particularly in rural areas, that they would have the option of having a physics course or whatever. There's also so much flexibility and being able to progress at your own speed. I think you also bring up a very good point about the waiver. Madam Chair and Representatives, this bill is going to go to Conference Committee. The companion SF 1528 is different from my bill, and so we will continue to work on the language. And Representative, that's a very good suggestion. The intent is not to handicap any student or any school. The intent is to encourage our schools to emerge into the 21st century and prepare our students for college and career. And there's just wonderful options out there. So thank you for the suggestion, and we will work on that.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me. Sorry to be late, so I didn't catch where this bill is going, what the motion was, is my first question.
As amended, I have suggested that it go back to the General Register.
Okay, Madam Chair, well, my questions are all revolving around finance, actually, and the fiscal note and where we stand with that based on the amendment. And, you know, when we had, as Representative Myra knows, I love her bill. I love the policy part. I have no concerns about the policy part of the bill other than the concern about one licensed person overseeing others. But the idea of the opportunity for students all over the state having it embedded in the teacher preparation program, I think that's all apple pie and motherhood. But my concerns revolve around how much does the bill cost? It is an unfunded mandate, so how much of an unfunded mandate for local school districts, given that we're going to be paying back the school shift for, you know, several bienniums probably, then we always try not to have new unfunded mandates. And so I'm wondering if anyone knows the status of the fiscal note. And otherwise, just like last time this bill was here, I would request that it go to finance. I would move that and ask for roll call vote. I would withdraw it, though, if there's anyone here that can address the finances.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. And that's an official motion.
Yes, it is.
Representative Greiling moves that this bill be re-referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance and has asked for a roll call. Can we further discuss before we vote on that, or would you like to vote on that right now?
Madam Chair, if anyone can discuss the
yes.
state of the fiscal note, that's what I would
and
entertain.
Okay, here comes the department. And perhaps,
Madam yes. Chair?
Representative Myra.
I understand that in the Senate there was a fiscal note that was generated based on two provisions. I had an author's amendment in education finance last time, which unfortunately you missed, but I deleted those provisions. And so the fiscal note was generated in the Senate for those provisions, and we took them out. And then also, you also missed, part of my author's amendment this morning is to remove the section requiring the department to re-review all of them, and that has been removed as well. So when it comes to the requirement that students have a course that is facilitated by technology, it's not adding any more courses to a student's requirement. It's just just saying that one of those courses, a minimum of one of those courses, needs to be facilitated by technology. And that can be entirely, or it can be blended with a teacher in the classroom, but there's technology involved.
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. You know, just to follow up on that, as far as the latest fiscal note, there's not a fiscal note completed for this bill as amended right now, so we don't have that. Obviously, this has gone through some changes, so that fiscal note would not be complete. Representative Myra may be correct of those costs being taken out, but that being said, we just do not have the fiscal note completed as it was just amended.
Representative Greiling, follow up.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Then I would let my motion stand, because I do know that last time in the hearing that I missed, that lasted about 3 minutes in education finance, all the Democrats actually missed it except for Representative Slocum, who couldn't find the meeting that the rest of us were at. But I raced down here and got here 3 minutes late, and whoosh, the bill had zoomed off already. That's why I really do appreciate this hearing. But I also would have my motion stand then, and I would appreciate some discussion in finance as well, because last time the amendments in finance that were whipped through in 2 minutes did not take care of the fiscal note. We still ended up with over 100,000 per year, and now we do have another amendment, but the department cannot tell us that it's down to zero. So I would like my motion to stand. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greiling, and we are checking with Greg Crow to see if he has any new information. Other discussion. Representative Norton.
I think I was trying to decide if it's on this amendment or not, because
we're discussing the amendment.
And
not to that point.
Well, I think it is.
Okay, so, Representative Norton, go ahead.
I'm still struggling, and the reason I'm struggling is because we have an unfunded mandate, and I do believe on section 2.1 and 2.5, I understand and appreciate Representative Myra's plea that this particular bill is going to encourage districts to do something. I do want to encourage districts to continue to use digital learning, blended learning, and technology in the classrooms. I'm all for that, and we're in agreement there. She says that this is to facilitate that, and section 2.1 to 2.5, the end of 2.5, does more than facilitate, and I'm still having issues on 2.1, at least one digital course credit. And I'm not convinced that this particular language does what she's suggesting it does, saying that it's going to facilitate some use of technology in a classroom. This language still concerns me, that it's saying you have to have a course credit that is digital learning, not just using digital learning in a classroom. And so I think with that and what this will mean for local districts, the finances involved, I don't think maybe Representative Greiling's right that the cost isn't going to be at the state level, and we'll have that fiscal note and we'll find out. But there is going to be a cost for local districts, and we can't pretend there's not with this kind of mandate. So it's not really a question, other than I'm going to just continue to encourage Representative Myra to look at that language. My preference would be that we not have a mandate at all, and that we put some other language in law that says districts should work to provide digital learning and blended learning in all their classrooms, not just one. So I think, in general, we're agreeing with the concept of what we want to do with technology in the state, but I have continued and serious concerns with the mandate in 2.1 through 2.5.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Our encouragement is getting to be costly. We've encouraged quite a bit this week, and I think to local districts, they're just going ching, 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 ching. So, oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Madam Chair.
So, yes.
May I make a comment?
Yes, Representative
Chair,
Myra.
Representative Norton. Unfortunately, you missed when I was talking about the amendment, author's amendment to that language, and you were just talking about how it reads, but that has been amended. Okay. I just wanted you to be aware of it since you came in late.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was aware of the amendment, and in my mind, it's still not quite fixing, and it still is a mandate, and I prefer that section taken out.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I, like others, I definitely agree that technology is hugely important, and I think that most schools are really there. I even hear from Representative Keel that, you know, those who can in the urban in a rural community are moving towards that end. I know I have a grandson who's in the third grade, and they've been using computers since kindergarten. So it's us who may not be there, but they're there, and schools are definitely there. But as an urban representative who sits here listening to others present about the impact that this can have on the rural community, it really concerns me that we are, again, setting a requirement. And that word requirement is just not sitting right with me, but to require all schools to modify, to require every student to have this online learning is a little, I guess it's a little disturbing to me, because I think the bottom line, what we really want to do here is to ensure that every student is successful and is graduating. And if we have rural communities that are, that may or may not be able to have this internet connection in a rural community, I think we need to take that into consideration. And it really concerns me when the fact that we can say clearly that we are not funding education. We are not funding schools. And here we are shifting that burden to the schools to mandate them to do what you are requiring them to do. The intent and the idea is great and it's fantastic, but sometimes it's the unintended consequences that have a huge impact on kids and an educational system. So as a urban representative, I am realizing that I'm also a statewide representative, and you know, the rural community is a concern of mine too, because I really want every child to be successful. And if we're going to do this, we must just fund schools and give them opportunity to do what they need to do. Thank you.
You know, I know that in the audience we have some online providers. Could one or two of you come to the table and comment on the extent to which we have students taking online learning courses across the state? Because I think it's pretty widespread. Thank you, sir, for joining us. And please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Voss. I work with the Northern Star Online Consortium, and I'm also the chair of the State Online Advisory Council. In answer to the question as to whether or not students across the state are taking online courses, I think the answer is yes, there are available courses for them to take, but the connection issue is real. I do think the Broadband Task Force has looked into that, and while currently I think the auditor's report showed that there are about 2% of
yes.
students taking what are considered online courses around the state, that's still a pretty small number, and it does not reflect what's happening within districts. And I think there is an important distinction to make that may sometimes get lost in this, is that the original statute was intended to govern online learning as an open enrollment option, that students could enroll into an online program or enroll into a part-time supplemental program, and that was largely what is intended to govern. What we see now is digital learning as an instructional delivery method, and that affects every student in every school in every district. And I do think that that's the direction that every school is headed and will be headed. And so there are some concerns, I think, as we move forward as to how we support that while we maintain the open enrollment option. So yes, the opportunities are there. Expanding that requirement is going to take some work on the part of local schools.
Representative Peterson, Sandra, to that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a question for digital learning person. is there a charge for the students to take these online courses? The district pays it. Is there a range? What would those costs be for a student?
Mr. Voss.
Or for a district if every student has to take them?
Thank you,
I'd say per pupil.
Chair and Representative Peterson. Right now there are a couple of ways that it can be done. The online learning statute allows for supplemental online enrollment, which means that a student can replace one of the courses during their day with an online course, And for the general ed ADM associated with that course, 88% of it goes to the online provider and 12% of it stays with the local district. And that amounts to about $488 per semester credit that goes to an online provider, and the remainder of it goes to the local school. So it is split right now if it's part of the school day. Students can also take classes beyond a full load at school, and then they pay tuition, and that often ranges from $300 to $400, depending on where they're getting it from.
Representative Peterson?
But just a follow-up. So if a high school has, let's see, well, their graduating class of 600, mm-hmm. that'd be about 600 times 400, just as an estimate about what it would cost.
Mr. Voss.
Thank you. As an estimate, based on if every single student took an online class from a supplemental provider. But like I said, there's a great deal of work going on within school districts now to provide digital learning opportunities for every student. I think that's really where we want to head as a state, is that every student should have an opportunity to use digital learning in every class at every level, and every teacher needs to be trained to do this so that we don't have the separation between an online provider that a student enrolls in outside of the school, right. and digital learning that takes place within the school. That I think what Representative Myra is suggesting is that both of those things would meet the requirement mm-hmm. that she's asking over time, and then that we would put into place for the next 4 years or so. And there, it is important to still have both of those things going on because of the things that have been mentioned about students being able to take classes that they can't normally get at school, aggregated enrollment, and various other reasons for students who can't be in school. So I think both of those things, if they are going to meet this requirement, are where we want to head as to how fast that takes and how much it costs. That's to be seen.
Representative Peterson, another follow-up.
Just yes. One last follow-up. And in terms of a district or even a school doing their planning, and I agree, I think it's great if it's done within the school. I don't think this, I'm not sure this, I assume this indicates that it can be done within the school.
Yes,
but for planning purposes, right. it's the student who makes a determination, as I am hearing it here. Would it be easy for a school to plan, you know, for financially for what they have to allot for online within the school versus outside providers?
Mr. Voss.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, planning is never easy. And in this regard, it does become difficult to know which students are going to take what courses because it is a student choice option. So just like whether or not you're going to have all of the students that you expect enrolling in school, we also don't know how many students are going to enroll in particular courses online or take them in other places. The number of enrollment options is probably unparalleled with other states that we compared to what we have in Minnesota between all the options that we have. And as online providers, we also face that same uncertainty because we never know in August how many students we're going to have in September or October. So the planning part of it is difficult. I think if the school has options and they are aware of what they are and they're communicating those well to the students and the parents and the counselors, that it becomes a whole lot easier to plan if that's laid out for them. I don't know if that's a clear
thank you, Mr. Voss. And Representative Greiling, because you've raised this concern, I would ask you to withdraw your motion, and I will change the motion, and we will send this to Finance.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greiling, because I think Mr. Voss has raised some more issues. So, Representative Myra, we'll change your motion to re-refer this right. to K-12 Finance, where these discussions need to occur. So do we have other questions on the policy that we're dealing with here? Representative Kath, to the policy.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and to Representative Myra. You know, I guess I want to give you kudos to the fact that we need to move in this direction, and I think the definitions of the digital learning and the blended are very important and critical there. And I would say to the mandate within that is that I think we're moving organically in this direction, that we're seeing districts take this on. And something that I want to caution us as a committee to recognize is that it isn't just about equipment. You know, we have a ton of equipment. We have kids that can check out computers and iPads, but we have a lot of kids that can't check them out because once they get them home, they can't use them. You know, and we're in a district where we have access to every sort of broadband, every single thing that you possibly can, but financially those families cannot at home have that, and so when the child brings that piece of equipment at home, they couldn't do it online anyway because they do not have access to that. And so these are the questions that are there. On top of that, and something I want us to really look at here, is what I'm concerned with is that we will start to switch and we'll see districts go and run towards the blended classroom versus the true digital learning. True digital learning is going to require something like Moodle, D2L. These are the true online things, but you have to pay a per pupil rate to have access to those. And that truly is online learning. What I'm scared is that if we move this too fast, they're all going to shift really quickly to the blended style, which is where you just do it in the classroom, and once they leave the walls of that classroom, our learning is done, but we embedded technology every day in that room. So let's be careful of that, because if we truly want to go where you're desiring, it is the online and that digital learning that we know would be very, very successful for our students. We know that we have students that can't take it because the only access that they would have is to go to our public library to do the D2L or the Moodle or to come early into school or things like that, that may be a possibility for some of them. So I just want to caution us that this is moving this way organically, and we're seeing schools do this, and the more encouragement we can do. But I think what we can do in encouragement is that we should be funding some of this. We should be looking at some grant opportunities. We should be looking, Madam Chair, I know you have a bill right now that would give an education tax credit to families to get broadband in their own homes, to expand it to that. And those are the types of things right now that would move us in that direction so that organically we would see it going that way, but then we would give that individual the opportunity. So I know it's diverting a little of the attention from the bill here, but that is, I think, the movement that we need to go, and I hope that that's what we'd see by the time this bill reaches the floor.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'd just like to follow up, and Representative Kath has basically said what I wanted to say, but I did have one question of either the department or Representative Myra, and that is Representative Keel's question, which I don't think we got a direct answer for, and that is, if we have districts that do not have access to broadband at the time that this legislation comes into effect, is there an opportunity in this legislation as it's written to allow a district to seek a waiver until they either find the resources or a broadband is in fact extended to those areas where it may not be yet? So that's one question. Then, Madam Chair, only because of a comment made about older teachers not being prepared, some of us were and are and did much of this work as early as the 1980s, at least in my district. Mm. So I just want to defend the more mature members of the teaching profession, if I may. But yeah, this question having to do with waiver, I think that's really important one, because even if there may not be a fiscal note as far as expenses for the state, fiscal notes that are going to impact school districts are just as significant to me as ones that affect the state. And there's too much of this shifting off onto local governments, local school districts, local counties, by well-meaning legislation here at the legislature. So I just don't like to support that kind of thing if it's happening. But the question about the waiver, please.
Yes. Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, I would want to reiterate that the intent of this bill is not to handicap any child or any school district, and I am willing to look at the comments by Representative Keel on having a waiver that would be available for districts that don't have the access.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Benson, follow up?
Yes, well, that is a really important issue for me, and I'd be much more pleased to be able to support the legislation, because the direction that you're attempting to move in is, of course, one I think everyone could accept. I certainly do, and so I congratulate you on the content and the objectives. Thank you, Madam Chair.
To this point, Yes, Representative Kath.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would speak out adamantly against a waiver. I think what that's going to do is it's going to say to those districts that now you don't have to worry about this because you don't have broadband, when really what we should be doing is enhancing the opportunity to get broadband and that we should be encouraging these districts to move organically towards that. Again, these waivers will do just that. They'll say, oh, great, we now do not have to work towards that. It's off of our plate. And it does. You go take a look at any waiver that you give for any of these things, it says we have now just bided our time, and this is not what we should be doing. What we should be doing is encouraging this growth, encouraging this movement towards this, and looking at who are those districts that would be seeking a waiver and figure out what could we do for them to actually move towards that. And I know that's not the intention of possibly having a waiver, but that's what happens with waivers like this, is that it just pauses them and puts them at a stop at this time. So I would speak out against that and say that let's find a way to make this bill move forward that would allow for the encouragement of this stuff that is already happening.
Well, Representative Kapp, I hope the department was listening to you because they have a huge waiver on their plate. Did you hear that, department? I hope you listen to Representative Kapp. Representative Benson, follow up.
Thank you. I'd like to follow up on that. Representative Kapp, you had just said earlier that we ought to move towards finding a way to support this movement because this is not fiscally neutral at all. Of course I agree with you that it is possible that districts that do not want to move in this direction, although you haven't identified any of them, may find this as an excuse. But not having any money or any resources to do is not some kind of an excuse or an attempt to avoid moving into the 21st century. So your word encourage is one you ought to switch into we ought to mandate it whether they have the money or not. That's the issue. Thank you,
Representative
Madam
O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Byra, the bill is very noble, and I want to kind of just expand on some of the things that Representative Keel had indicated, that in the particular part of the state that she lives in, the co-op that she's associated with is able to provide broadband to that area. I think this is kind of on topic. I had the opportunity earlier this week to meet with the members of a co-op that are in my district, and for the lack of a better analogy, I'm kind of a city mouse representative and a country mouse representative. And I was told today or yesterday when they came down that the FCC has usurped local control on broadband placement in rural areas and that they will now be making decisions on how that happens, and so I've taken the local co-ops out of that. So I think you have to kind of also balance some of those kinds of issues, which I think are kind of on topic with what we're speaking about here today. Just a comment from a conversation I had with constituents yesterday.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Myra.
Thank you for the comment.
Are there others with questions? Representative Keel, I'm sorry, did you want to follow up?
I just wanted to point out a couple things. We assume that there's a lot of expense, and schools are already moving toward the technology. Yes, we could fund it better. I wouldn't doubt that at all. But I think our schools are there already moving toward that. And I wanted to point out that while we pay for some of the online classes, I happen to know a student who wanted to take a unique class. And between two teachers and some online subject, they were able to give him an online class in an individual program. And it was successful. Actually, the child is now looking into his career by doing this exact thing. Didn't cost the school any money. In fact, the class was a free, when they were getting their package of internet things, it was a free internet class or a program that was sitting. No one was using it. And the student said, hey, can't I do this? And one teacher said, it happened to be in two different departments, the business department and the music department, and each teacher said, oh, I don't have expertise in this portion, the business portion. And so what they did was the teachers worked together, and the student was able to take that class. So I think we need to give the schools some credit. I really do think school boards and schools are working on it. As far as access, I find it very hard to not find access to my computers wherever I'm at. I mean, I'm in this rural school that I saw all this stuff. It's a very I wouldn't say it's poverty, but there isn't a lot of money there. And I asked the principal, I said, so are the students able to use their computers when they get home? He said, I have never once had a complaint about that. Mm. They have no problem with and he said some of the schools don't need online internet when they go home. The teacher provides a program right on the computer mm-hmm. that the student is working at home, so they don't need internet. So I think we're worrying about things we shouldn't be. I think the school is going where it need. The schools are going where they need to go, and hopefully financially we'll be better shortly and be able to fund some of this. Thank you.
Closing comments, Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, I think this is a very exciting area. Digital learning is expanding by leaps and bounds, and I want our state and our students to be ahead of the game, and I want them to be, we need to gear up and be prepared. So I would ask for your support on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Myra. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2127, the second engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and this bill is on its way to K-12 Finance. Thank you, Representative Myra, and I, members, remember she's meeting with Representative Mariani and Representative Pulowski and others, and that's when, Representative Myra?
Next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, to work out some of the other issues that are before us. So thank you for your hard work, Representative Myra.
Next, we will have Representative Erickson, and she'll be offering House File 1510.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 1510 to be before the committee and offer the DE1 amendment.
Representative Erickson would like to introduce 1510, and she is wanting to have the DE10 amendment. Representative Erickson, to your...
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me explain this before we vote on it. The Delete Everything Amendment, labeled DE1, adds to the original 1510 the requirement that the alternative teacher pay system that was adopted in 2005, which we all call QComp, and in fact in the title we now say QComp, so I guess we've moved away from that original title, requires that those who have QComp plans align them now with the teacher evaluation 35% achievement. And so the reference in Subdivision 2 on line 1.5 through 1.7 is exactly that reference. And then, Madam Chair and members, the original bill begins then on page 3, section 334, with the original intent, which is to offer principals, just offer them, not mandate, not make it a must, but offer them the opportunity to participate also in the alternative teacher compensation program, as we call QComp, and then adding some specific language to align with that in sections 5, 6, 7, and that then completes the amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson, and I believe that Ms. Larson has a technical amendment as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. On the H1510 DE1 amendment, page 7, line 5, the section reference should be 122A.4152. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson, on page 7.
Line 5.
That's okay. It's a 4152 is the technical amendment on page 7, and Representative Erickson.
Yes, I'll incorporate that. You know, we work Ms. Larson so hard, and Ms. Larson, we thank you so much for what you do. But she just missed one number, members, and so we've inserted the one. Thank you very much. That's incorporated. And Madam Chair, I think with that, you could vote to approve the amendment, and we'll hear from my testifiers.
Thank you. Representative Erickson would like us to take a vote on the amendment that we adopt, the amendment, the DE1 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, amendment has passed, and Representative Erickson to your bill.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Currently, there are 52 Minnesota school districts and 56 charter schools, according to the MDE website, who are participating in QCOMP for the 2011-12 school year. These programs serve 470 school sites, making up 16,878 full-time equivalency count for licensed staff and 245,739 students. And we know that there are other districts that are interested in becoming a part of QCOMP. But with me is Roger Aronson, who will talk about the principal piece of this proposal.
Mr. Aronson.
Madam Chair, members, we appreciate the Chair authoring this bill and bringing this forward. As you all know, QCOMP was adopted in a bipartisan fashion in 2005. And I think the scope of this bill is probably less than what it appears on its face. One of the issues that we've had in some districts that have QCOMP programs is that some fences or silos have been created where the staff development component of this, that the teachers have adopted the position that principals aren't part of this, that this statute is just driven to teachers. And if you look at the same website that Representative Erickson was referencing on the department, it talks about the financial part of it, but it also says that QCOMP is to do embedded professional development, that it's to do evaluation, that it's to do performance pay, and we think when those things are happening with the teaching staff at the local level that there shouldn't be any barriers to the principals participating in that. I might say on the economic side of this, the money isn't per se driven, you know, exclusively to the teachers, because I know that they have some concerns when it looks like we're interested in taking money that they think is directed towards them. And as Representative Erickson and I have discussed in preparation for this, we actually drive quite a bit of leadership pay or performance pay or whatever you want to label it these days to principals out of school district budgets. So we're not really looking to change that portion of it here. And I don't think there's anything in the bill that would give the department any specific direction that they had to send any additional money to the principals at all. And it would be local people continuing to put together their grants and having them submitted. But this would say that QCOMP is, I mean, it would be your message to say that QCOMP is a program that we want the principals locally to be involved in the embedded professional development, in the evaluation piece, and in the performance pay. I might say in the amendment as well, Representative Erickson has added the references into the new teacher evaluation system. We have the new principals evaluation system that's in play here as well. And I know that we're doing a lot of issues at the Capitol this year, and you're going to do some more before the end of this. But the issue that we did last year on principal and teacher evaluation, that is the central issue that we're talking about right now in schools and making that stuff work. And I think that issue is going to be around for a very, very long time. Evaluation is not going to go away. Some things have. The profiles went away. The OBE went away. Who knows where NCLB is? It waved away. But evaluation will continue to be a core center part of education, as will embedded professional development. So, Madam Chair, I would say that our point is that principals and teachers should all be involved in that at the local level. And that's not suggest, I just to make sure, that that's happening everywhere. But it has happened in some very large districts where we said we don't want the principals involved. This is exclusively a teacher program. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. And Madam Chair, Erickson, would you, do you have other testifiers?
No, not that I know of, okay. But you might want to ask because
all right.
they might be here.
Those in the audience that are willing to testify in favor, please. I think we'll do that first. Anyone in favor? All right. And now we have the department, so those opposed.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. I don't think I want to come up here saying we're opposed or supporting, but we did just want to point out some
concerns.
Ideas and concerns that we would just like to point out. As we're just looking through this amendment, I think... I appreciate the author bringing this bill forward to have this discussion. One thing that we did want to point out is that Chair Erickson is correct about the amount of districts that are in QComp. And we appreciate the idea of connecting the new teacher evaluation to the QComp. However, all districts are going to have to implement a teacher evaluation program, and they won't have the benefit of being the additional of having the additional resources for being in a QComp district. So that's one point I did want to make. One of the issues right now, the performance pay for teachers, and this is to put on the table here for discussion. Performance pay is distributed for teachers for meeting a school-wide student achievement goal, meeting a grade level or personal student achievement goal, or earning an average of proficient or better on three annual evaluations. That is how the performance pay would be disseminated to teachers. I don't know exactly. I know that this bill is connecting the principal evaluation to that, but the principals wouldn't have the same performance evaluations as teachers as those are moving forward. So I think that might be a concern that we want to address going forward. The other question, and this is maybe more for the author, we were looking at this under 3.31 as well as 4.16 is the goal. Is this to have districts that already have QComp to allow principals to participate? On 4.16, is this moving forward that they have to have the teacher evaluation or the principal evaluation to be part of QComp? We were just wondering if it means that it's only applying to districts that already are in QComp, and the ones that already are in QComp, would they have to adopt this these new standards to continue in QComp? So that was another question I think we might have.
Representative Erickson, would you like to answer that question?
Well, Madam Chair, the effective date is immediately after the signing of this bill, so that would apply to those who have QComp presently, as well as those in the future.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Yes.
My question is, Madam Chair, is would the districts already in QComp need to update their plans based?
Absolutely. Madam Chair and members, yes, they have to update their plans.
Okay.
By sending notice to the commissioner.
Mr. Henry, do you have a follow-up question?
Sure. Just another point. Just wanted to point out they're on line 4.13. The department must develop and disseminate model supplemental education improvement plans. Obviously, that does take administrative burden to the department on that we'd just like to point out. I don't know if there's been a fiscal note requested or not. Obviously, that's something that we're more than happy to work with the author on that. And I think those were
Madam
the
Chair, that's yes. Why I didn't make my motion specific, because I wanted to hear these concerns as to whether or not we send this to K-12. So I'm listening carefully.
Thank you. Mr. McHenry, you have any
And Madam Chair, members,
He's
I think...
He's listening. You better take advantage of that.
And Madam Chair, members, I think that we'll leave it at that, but just wanted to point out those, and we look forward to continue working with you all on the committee and Madam Chair on this bill and other issues that are popping up here.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Representative Erickson.
I don't know if there are others who want to speak. I think we're ready for questions.
Okay.
Excuse me, the Education Minnesota.
Yes, Education Minnesota, Ms. Alschweiger. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alschweiger, Education Minnesota. And we believe this would be a fine idea if it were funded. Certainly, principals should have some kind of opportunity for additional funding or money paid. But many of them already have that negotiated in their contract for performance pay. So now you're talking about giving them another bonus or whatever you'd want to call it. Actually, our teacher, we got quite a bit of feedback from our teachers who are already in QComp. And they believe that this original legislation was designed to encourage the leadership of classroom practitioners, not for administrators. And it therefore really doesn't seem to fit the needs of administrators, and maybe we would have to examine the whole plan. To take administrators and pop them into a QComp statute that was designed to help classroom practitioners doesn't really fit. One of our teachers said that career ladder positions are intended for teachers who are willing to step up and take leadership positions, which our principals should also be doing just by virtue of their job and their role. And at this point, we wonder if this bill would, there's already a law stating now that we passed that teachers would have to be evaluated in the course of 3 years, one time at least, by a formal observation by an administrator. And again, they keep coming back to say, you know, that's part of their job. And if this is seen as something to help them get additional pay, we don't think that this is the right method. They've talked about how tight the QCOMP budget already is. One of them said, how thin are we going to slice this onion? Because some are facing declining enrollments. One district actually in their QCOMP plan is taking $300,000 of their QCOMP money to help the district on their initiatives, such as, and I know Representative Erickson has supported this, coaching and mentoring via the literacy collaborative model. Mm-hmm. And by using QCOMP creatively to promote the literacy initiatives that Representative Erickson has promoted and some of the teacher work, we're just slicing this pie too thin. There isn't anything wrong with doing this. There's nothing wrong with doing this. But the money's just not there. And now, we agree with the department's concerns as well, but now we're going to require this whole new evaluation system for every teacher in the state. And I would guess that these plans that they're developing are going to be QCOMP-like plans. And so every teacher, every district, I would guess, might be wanting QCOMP money. And shouldn't we put those people in the priority list? But if we then add administrator, we once again make the slice of the pie thinner. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alschweiger. Representative Erickson, would you like to comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, one of the goals of the original legislation in 2005 was to provide performance pay, absolutely. But my bill is not about the money. My bill is about making sure that in the 21st century, our school leaders and our instructional staff are working together as one. And as I have looked at QCOMP plans, one in my own district, the money is being disseminated to everyone. And I don't think that was what we considered the goal of QCOMP when we created it. It was to provide that reward, if I may call it that, to teachers who were doing extraordinary work. And now I want principals to be a part of that extraordinary work. We have to start looking more specifically at a system that is rewarding student achievement, rewarding improvement in the teaching arena, and also involving our school leaders so that they're a part of this whole. This is not to be silos. This is to be a whole. So if we don't allow principals into this plan that some districts have and some charters have, we are saying they don't count towards student achievement. And remember that principals will be responsible in this proposal for the 35% achievement that the teachers are responsible for. So this is opening a door to entice principals to realize that student achievement is ever so important. In addition to, you know, measuring principal performance in Minnesota, this is presently what they're going to face. We have added in the last year to the role of the principal, Representative Kath. I hope you're excited to become one of these school leaders. An enormous amount of, well, the superintendent actually, but the principal too has to fulfill this evaluation if he or she expects to continue to be a school leader. And I rein in on the tough side, so I want us to be leader.
And I, you know, I rein in on the tough side, so I want us to be tougher than easier. And I'm, my expectation is that we're going to have the best principals in the nation as they work through this, and I also want the best teachers in the nation. And a secondary piece is receiving that monetary reward. Well, Madam Chair, that's my long answer to an easy question.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Are there any others in the audience that are opposed to this legislation? Then we'll get to committee questions. All right. Now we will open it up to the committee for questions. The first one is Sandra Peterson. Sandra Peterson. I keep calling you. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just needing now to clarify because sitting on the principal's evaluation work group, we talked a great deal about this esprit de corps and the idea that everybody should be on the same page. And I think I heard you say that it would be part of the agreement that the principals also would be held to the 35% student achievement. I thought you said that, and I don't know if that's inherent in this language. Is it included in here? But I think that's an important piece because that was not the end result of the discussions in the principals group. But I think it's great that the principals want to be part of that and want to be included as part of that.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson.
Yes, Sandra, Representative Erickson. Yes.
It is embedded in this that the 35% will be a part of. Because that if that becomes a part of quality compensation, QCOMP, and principals participate, they will be a part of that mix. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. And Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is more backing up a step, and I'm listening with interest to how we're now defining QCOMP, and, you know, maybe I've just been in education too long, but when QCOMP first came out, it was about removing steps and lanes.
Yes, it was.
And moving to measure quality based on the use of staff development and improved learning. And so as I listen to this, I think it's interesting how the whole concept of QCOMP has changed, and we've forgotten perhaps what started, what didn't happen, and now we're trying to make that happen again in a whole different model. So it's just a comment, but that whole component of what QCOMP is and how it started and what it was and now what it is are very different, and we're moving to this new model. I do want to just add that I think it's interesting, the 35% and the measurement, using that all the way up the chain. You know, what's good for one might be good for all. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Thank you, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Representative Erickson, did you have a follow-up comment?
Well, Representative Norton is correct. This started out to be a replacement of steps and lanes, and in negotiations, I'm sure Representative Greiling remembers this, it did not become that. But as I have looked at school districts who have QCOMP, and I'll use Princeton as an example, every teacher in Princeton received performance pay based on their plan. So I think that it's time that we re-examine plans. And maybe every Princeton teacher was worthy of that. But there were a lot of questions raised by the community when we learned that. And, of course, they asked me the big question, too. How does that happen? And it does happen based on the goals they set. And if the goals they set were to improve testing on the MCAs by 1% or 2%, you know, then all are going to receive the reward. But I'm not sure that that is where I stand on why we have this special program. The special program is to improve learning and increase learning, raise achievement, and improve teaching. First and foremost, improve teaching. So,
thank you, Representative Peterson. Next is Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, just a quick one. Ms. Allswiger had brought up a concern about slicing the onion too thinly and had mentioned that many contracts, or maybe all contracts, maybe the department could enlighten us about it, having to do with administrative incentive pay, that it's already in the contracts for them. And I am concerned that the limited funds that are directed towards improving teaching in the classroom and providing incentives, that some of the money might be sent somewhere else or sent to administrative incentives when they already have it. I'm just curious whether or not that is now common practice within administrations, because it is a concern about maybe shifting some of the funds from the original QCOMP directives.
Representative Erickson, would you like the department to answer that question?
I don't know if the department can answer that. School Boards no. Association principals.
Yeah. Mr. Aronson, I see you coming back to the podium. Thank you. Identify yourself again, please.
Madam Chair, Roger Aronson. I represent the two principals associations. I think in response to Representative Benson's question, the answer is there are several major principal contracts that have compensation that's directly connected to results. The St. Paul principals are ratifying an agreement right now. I mean, today. Their group is doing a new contract, going to be in effect for next year, and so there is money in that. And I know that the discussion on this is kind of going back towards money, and that's a legitimate discussion always to have. But our intent of this bill isn't about money. The intent is in those areas where the staff development is not taking place in the manner, you know, in which you described, we want to take away any real or imagined impediments to doing that, to getting back to what the original intent was here. And I don't think these grants have to be approved by the department. The commissioner's going to have an awful lot of authority as to what these grants say. And whatever the compensation is locally, I mean, that's going to come in the grant and as that's set. So those end up being local decisions, they end up being voluntary decisions. But we are a lot more interested in the staff development part of this and the involvement, not separate staff development, right, but the involvement with the teacher staff development. I think in response to Representative Benson's questions, if you look closely at some of the grants in some of the districts, portions of this money has been excerpted to hire local newly created position administrators to administer this stuff locally, and that it suddenly becomes a plan that's completely separate from the school principals. And that, I mean, you know, that really is what we were trying to get at here. I mean, there isn't any other mischief involved with this or any more trying to drive money to somebody else. I mean, I don't know how more transparent I can be than that in this.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. As Representative Erickson, do you have a follow-up on that?
No, Madam Chair. I'll stand for more questions.
Okay. More questions from the committee. And we have, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hate to be a broken record, but I was out of the room when the motion was made. Where is this bill going?
Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, we're still wandering. Because I didn't make a specific motion because I had to hear concerns about whether folks thought this should go to finance as well. So
Representative
Greiling, I welcome a motion to finance if that's what the committee thinks.
Representative Greiling, do you have a follow-up?
What I'll make my motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was going to be my motion. I'm happy to have the chair make it. I appreciate that. You know, once again, we need to have the finance discussions, and this is the policy committee. But as all of us who serve on finance know, as soon as you add another use to a finite pot of money, that is a big finance question, because the more uses you have for something, then the less money there is for the original uses. And so this, I will save those kind of concerns for the finance committee. But I do have one question, and it's for Mr. Aronson. I apologize if you answered this when you were up there and I wasn't focusing or not. But Mr. Aronson, did you say that you do support this bill, and does that include having the teachers have the 35% the same, or the principals having the 35% evaluation based on test scores like teachers?
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Representative Erickson, would you like to hear more questions from the committee? Oh, Representative Roger and
Madam Chair, Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, there's a short answer to that and there's a long answer to that. The short answer to that is no. And the long answer has to do with the seven meetings at the principal evaluation task force about it's the general judgment of the superintendents, the school board members, the principals, and the teachers that were on that task force that the science is not at where we need it to have a tool to say 35% of what in the evaluation. Okay, and that's why people are no on that. But I do know in this bill that if there is a grant application that goes to the commissioner, that she has strong opinions about this. And so when the author says there are going to be some high numbers on that percentage of principal's evaluation, I think that's true. So when she says that's embedded in there, I think that's true because I was in the room with the discussions with the commissioner when that took place. I might say that the principal's evaluation, and this, it's very important to keep this in mind when you try to compare the teacher evaluation and the principal's evaluation. The principal's evaluation is completely directed by local districts. It doesn't have to be negotiated with the principals locally. When that school board and that superintendent says this is what the principal's evaluation is going to be, and whatever the number is that they want to put in it, that's what it's going to be. The teacher evaluation, and it consistent with the statute, mm-hmm. but the teacher evaluation has to be either locally negotiated or the default model that's currently coming out there. So the principals actually have a lot less to say on that, and local models may be 50%, they may be higher than that, but some component of, and obviously student performance is going to be in every one of these evaluations. I mean, that's what's going on right now with all of the evaluations that we have that are being developed. So the raw 35% number, there was a rejection of that at the task force by the large majority of the task force, and it's on those reasons. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Representative Greiling, you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. Mr. Aronson, I agree with you on the prematureness of selecting 35% for principals, and I also, that was my opinion for teachers as well. Did the principals take a position on the 35% for teachers?
Representative, Mr. Aronson, I'm determined to make you a legislator today.
Madam Chair, there'd be a large group of people be determined not to. I can guarantee you that. I think that Representative Greiling, I think the answer to that is no, and that the when the presentation was there was a presentation made jointly to the teacher task force evaluation task force and the principal evaluation task force, and we had the very high end folks that do this type of work and the development of this work. And they made the comment that you need to be confident that the tool you're using is capable of supporting the judgments you make. That's a critical sentence, and we're not there yet. I think that this overall process, the reason principals are satisfied with this is we've got a lot of lead time, and we think as time goes on, we're going to make this work. Evaluation isn't going to go away. It's going to be here, and so the direction that we got with the bill last year is to get these very bright people who work in this area to start developing these tools, because there's going to be a big market for them. I mean, the minute these tools are available that work, that tell you what's working, you know, with a level of confidence, then we can implement them. But to date, no, they don't support the 35% piece as being rather arbitrary, and there are other numbers in other states. We've looked at those other numbers, it's just too raw, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Yes, and one more follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wouldn't have needed it, but except I'm not quite clear on the answer. Is the principal 35% opposition just for principals, or is it the same for teachers?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think I said we don't support that 35% model and the teachers either. No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. You're welcome, Representative Greiling. Are there any other questions? Representative Sandra Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a bit confused by the answer. I thought the answer was just, well, I like your last answer, but I think some of this is just a little vague. I mean, I thought I heard.
Madam Chair, I'm a lawyer.
I can tell.
He's paid
very evasive, I think. Representative Erickson, I thought when I asked, said that yes, the 35% is a part of the expectation for these. And I guess I should have asked, is it in the language? I didn't see it at 35%, but when you're meeting the same expectations as teachers, it would be 35%. So I think I'm hearing mixed messages here, and can you clarify?
Representative Erickson, would you like to answer?
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, 1.5 of the Delete Everything Amendment. The school board must approve an educational improvement plan that is consistent with Section 122A.40, sub 8, Section 122A.41, sub 5, and that is a reference to the teacher evaluation.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So,
Representative Peterson.
So then that would be the 35%, but I'm hearing Mr. Aronson say that's not particular, may not be true.
Mr. Aronson, Representative Erickson is looking at you, so I think she wants you to answer that question.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, what I did say is that the 35% standard is not in the statute for principals, and so it's not incorporated by reference for principals. It is in the statute for teachers, so it gets incorporated by reference for teachers. My expectation is, or my thought is, in terms of our dealings with the commissioner, that she's not going to approve any QComp grants that have principals in it. I don't speak for her, but I'm telling you what my expectations are. And that she has high expectations for principals in this matter, and it would be up to her. Under this language.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Representative Erickson, I believe the department would like a follow-up comment regarding Mr. Aronson's comment.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. I just wanted to follow up and clarify on the intentions of the commissioner. I don't think anybody here should suggest the intentions of the commissioner of what she would or would not approve. Also, as you all know, as your putting together legislation and considering it, the department always follows the laws and the statutes that are passed, and that's exactly how the current commissioner operates. And the and as you guys are debating this language, commissioners change, and so I don't think we want to. I'd hate for people to suggest the motives of the commissioner and just suggest that on behalf of her and the Department of Education, that we are just looking forward to following what is passed in statute, and that will be our guidance.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Representative Erickson, I don't believe we have any more questions from the committee, so would you like to do a follow-up, please?
Madam Chair, I'd renew my motion that 15110 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance.
Representative Erickson has recommended that her bill pass and be referred to the Education Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. No. The motion is carried. Thank you very much, Representative Erickson.
So, did you say
and the
no
meeting is adjourned.